is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and listening to WNRN, especially on a beautiful Sunday morning. For those of you who are staying inside or staying around the house due to finals at UVA graduation Sunday. Let me also thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. Celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. Come into Blue Ridge now to check out a wide selection of kayaks and canoes and stand-up paddle boards. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. And thanks to the Lexington's 95.3 and the listeners out there. Our topic today, it may sound like it's a Charlottesville Albemarle topic, but I think it will go a little farther than that. Anybody know? My mother is probably shouting at me if she's listening. Farther, being a English teacher for quite some time in her life. Sean Tubbs is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. I hope you are also. Sean Tubbs, senior reporter from the Charlottesville Tomorrow, as we talk about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Sean, Charlottesville Tomorrow, people, a lot of times, if you still read the Daily Progress, if you're online, you see that little blue-yellow CT that identifies that the article is from Charlottesville Tomorrow. A little basic background. It's meant to be a different type media, at least certainly reporting. Could you tell people how you are a non-biased reporter on this topic?
Sure. We are there to report government. We cover local government, both in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And, of course, this topic, the Western Bypass, is something that's been going on for about 25 years. In the 7 years of Charlottesville Tomorrow, at the very beginning, it was thought to be sort of a dormant project that wasn't going to go anywhere. But of course, here we are now, and they're reporting about it. I've been at Charlottesville Tomorrow now for 5 years, and our job is essentially to go to city council meetings, board of supervisor meetings, every single obscure meeting that you can possibly imagine for local government, because it's at those meetings that a lot of these decisions are made. And so over the last 5 years, my special interest is in transportation, and I've been very interested in how these projects get off the ground or don't get off the ground, how the funding goes to them. And Charlottesville Tomorrow is unique because our style, I think, is to get into those details and to know those details and to be able to distill them into a story that everyone who can't go to those meetings can hopefully understand.
Well, if transportation is your specialty or your deep interest, how do you not take a side?
I think the side I take on is basically that, you know, again, I'll just say that it goes down to arguments. We have lots of controversial projects in this area. The Meadow Creek Parkway, grade separated interchanges on Route 29. I think you become a journalist because you want to tell stories. And I think that this is a story that I'm fascinated by. I spend a lot of time in England, a place that has a different transportation system. And I'm always interested in comparisons to see how that stuff works here. Things like the daily train that we have now. We've covered that story over the years. And I think that I think the side I want to take is basically just getting people who want to make arguments to the table. That's, I think, the ultimate goal at Charlottesville Tomorrow. Is what we want to do is we want more people to become engaged, and we don't tell anybody what to think or any opinions. We just basically just want people to have the resources to make the most informed decision and the best argument.
All right, so we will be talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass, the past, the present, and the future of the topic. Sean Tubbs is our guest today, the senior reporter from Charlottesville Tomorrow. And our goal today to share the facts with you, dispel some of the fiction from folks and the arguments that are being made. You're welcome to call in. Let's give it a few minutes. The goal today is to give Sean, we'll be talking about some of the bids, the numbers that have come up in the last few months. You might want to get a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, because I think both sides have money that's been put out there to use, and then different people saying different numbers that come out to subtract as an expense. So I wanted to have a dry erase board in here. I don't have that, so I may ask you to repeat some things.
Sure.
Again, so the Route 29 Western Bypass, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. And again, the topic is going to go from Culpeper to Lynchburg and Danville, and it goes east and west from Richmond, where the money is coming from, and other projects may be losing their funding for, and west to Lexington and Harrisonburg, because when you only have so much money that the state has and you're putting it here rather than there, it affects everyone who's listening. So we'll take calls at about 20 after. Give us a few minutes to talk about the project. Sean Tubbs, again, senior reporter, Charlottesville Tomorrow. Sean, one of the things I wanted to talk about is everyone seemed to think that the project was dead, over. And then it came about in June of this year, and we'll get into a little bit later about how that came about. But many people say that it only came about because the 20 years was almost up. One of the things being that once a state buys your land from you for a project, you have 20 years to use it. If you don't, then you have to offer the money back. Explain that a little more.
Sure. Anytime that the Virginia Department of Transportation takes property, the clock starts ticking. And if the project isn't built within 20 years, there's still a bit of gray room about what actually would have happened. The Attorney General during the last administration had a different interpretation from this Attorney General. But this Attorney General, of course, is the one at the end of the day who mattered. And the decision was made, or the idea was that this is the time, that if we're going to start building this project, we better do it now, because otherwise we'll have to sell that property back to the original owner at the original sale price. And the first parcels of land started selling at, I can't remember if it was 91 or 92, but we're at that 20-year mark now. Now that the project has more money added to it and is active again, that has sort of gone away. VDOT purchased about two-thirds of the right-of-way beginning in about, 92, straight through. I'm not sure when the last one was purchased. I think it was 98 or 99. And so they actually own a lot of the properties along the way, a lot of houses that haven't been demolished. They're actually making money for the project off of renting those houses to the people who live there. This is on, I believe the road is called Squirrel Run, is one of the areas like that. So that was sort of the impetus to get this project moving. Supervisor Ken Boyd from Albemarle County has always been a proponent of this road and had wanted it included as a topic in Places 29. That is a master plan and transportation project that went forward that sort of envisioned a slightly different way of getting traffic through this corridor. Just going back, I guess it's important to say that US 29 is a major north-south, and this I'm going to put in quotes here, corridor of major significance. And what that basically means is that it's a high priority for VDOT to get traffic moving through that area. Downstate, I guess a main character in this story are the folks downstate who would very much like to see this road built because they built their bypasses. This is both in Danville, which built their sequence in two different stages. Lynchburg did. And now those communities are saying, well, wait a minute, we have to get something going here. So there's been a lot of pressure from down there to keep this project going. So even though it was dormant locally, statewide, or at least downstate from here, there were those who wanted to get it moving forward, and they looked at that right-of-way and said, we better get something done quickly.
And again, I know that I'm going to jump around. Please forgive me if I do that, listeners. So we know that Danville and Lynchburg have their own bypass. One of the accusations that's been made by folks who don't want this built is it's not long enough, and we'll continue to talk about that part throughout the hour. Do Danville and Lynchburg have similar accusations where their bypass, you still have to go through a lot of stoplights before you hit the bypass or after you come out on whatever terminus?
Sure.
Is the word?
They do to a certain extent, but it's not necessarily, it's the idea that US 29 is not a interstate, so it's not required to be a limited access highway. it's not required to be a limited access highway all the way through, which means that no traffic lights, essentially. So any locality along the way can do pretty much whatever they want or have had the ability to do whatever they want. So when this project was first designed, and actually when this route was first selected by the Commonwealth Transportation Board back in 1990, I think for those listeners who have been here for a while, just imagine Forest Lakes wasn't there. You didn't have the Target. You didn't have the Hollymead Town Center. Even going up into Greene County, you didn't have all of those developments that have now clustered onto US 29. So the project itself is sort of 6.2 miles. It goes from where basically St. Anne's Belfield is slightly to just below Forest Lakes. And so it sort of has become sort of obsolete in a way in terms of that. But at this point, there's also beginning plans for a potential expansion of the bypass, which at least is on the table as a plan right now. But of course, the big question is going to be funding. This is a very expensive project, and it's unclear whether they can get that in the future.
We are talking with Sean Tubbs. He's the senior reporter for Charlottesville Tomorrow, discussing the Route 29 Western Bypass. Certainly an important fixture or feature here in Charlottesville, Albemarle, but important from north to south and east to west in terms of is it built, and if so, the money spent in doing so. Let me take a moment and thank the folks at Dixon Disposal for allowing us to be here to talk about it today. When Dixon picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling during regular pickup. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or call them 434-978-2111. All right, back with Sean talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Sean, one of the big topics that led me to invite you on today, the bids have come in for this. Give me a little background on how the bids come forth, you know, how you request and receive a bid, and then we'll get into some of the actual numbers.
Sure. Well, this is a very unique process, which is sort of unprecedented in the state of Virginia. It's being done by what's called a design-build process, which means the bids that have been submitted are to finalize the design as well as build the project. And what that means is that it's proprietary information. Until the Commonwealth Transportation Board awards a contract on June 20th, none of us can take a look and see what these plans actually are. So there are some questions about that. The, seven bids were received, ranging from about $135 million to $215 million, I believe. And so even in that, I mean, like, a lot of people are curious about, well, what is the $215 million bypass build versus this $135 million bypass?
Yeah, because you know what? I said, well, you can call in now and leave your question, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS, talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Leslie's here today. She's taking the calls. But I said, you know, don't send anybody through until about 20 after the hour. We've already gotten a couple. And the first one that we got, what's the difference in the cost between the low and a high cost bid up to $80 million?
Well, the question is we don't know. We have absolutely no idea what those are going to look like. We've tried to get those documents. They have they are withholding them because they're exempt from the Freedom of Information Act until such time as they're actually public, and because they're proprietary, because Virginia's public procurement policy, again, prevents us from seeing those. So we're not quite sure, but these bids came through, one of these groups will get the process. We should find out sometime this week or next who that is, because there'll be, because there are certain specifications that have to be met, and so VDOT's team of experts has been looking at this of late. And,
such as what kind of specifications?
Specifications is everything ranging from, are the turn radiuses enough at the interchange? Is it technically feasible? What is the grade of the project? In other words, how steep is it as it goes through Stillhouse Mountain? Is it something that could work? Now, of course, some of those questions we really won't know because as part of this project, this is an interesting fact, the last major traffic study that was done to model for this bypass was done in, I believe it was 1990. So it's a very, very old document. And in order to satisfy that it can work, the winning bidder will also have to produce a traffic study to see if the designs that they've already turned in work. So
they have to do another traffic study, and that is part the bidder would pay for it, and that's sort of what they're charging for.
Yes.
With their with the bid that they sent in.
That's correct. And they have to perform all sorts of other services too. But it's important, I think, at this point to also point out that so on June 21st, the contract is awarded. The winning bidder actually can't do any work, substantial work on the project until another process is complete, and this is the environmental assessment of the project. That is something that is what that means is that the Federal Highway Administration has to approve projects such as this, and they did so back in 1997. The Southern Environmental Law Center sued them to say that this finding of no significant impact did not or was not complete. The Judge Norman Moon did not agree on 8 of the 9 counts, but he did grant them. So anyway, to draw that process out, the Federal Highway Administration last ruled on this process in 2003. So they require that VDOT go back and make sure that that previous federal approval is still valid. And that's one thing that we will see play out over the course of this summer and into the fall.
Now, and I've got some of the numbers here. I'm sure I'll mix them up. The bid, the low bid, or any of the bids coming in are saying, hey, we can do this project for $125 million, $136 million, I believe. That's the low bid. So Rick Moore Associates says, hey, I can do that project for $136 million. Because, and I bid that because I know already that I must go through and get this environmental approval.
Well, that's one of the questions, is that at one point during this bid process, before they were due, the bids were due in April, and so the companies had since from September to April to prepare these bids. One step in that process was this question and answer period. And a lot of the questions at the time actually concerned questions like this. And one of them was, one of the bidders asked, who's responsible for designing and paying for any environmental mitigations that might be required as part of the FHWA review? That was the question. And the response from VDOT was, the decision scheduled for late 2012 may contain additional commitments that will require implementation by the design builder. So in other words, that could mean more money is going to be required for this project should it go forward. It's sort of a catch-22 in a lot of ways, and that's what makes it sort of an interesting project to report on and study.
So we really don't know what that means. You can't tell from that question and answer whether they're saying the state will pay for it or, sorry, you bid on this and you've been given the project, and if that's part of the money expended, then sorry, that's, you know, control your expenses, but
well,
that's one of them.
But that's the thing, is that VDOT will be able to amend the bid. There's something called a change order. For anybody in construction, this is something that happens quite routinely. If suddenly you decide that you need a thicker gauge wire or something like that, you change the project. In this case, VDOT would likely put in a change order to add for these things. Now, these could be things like such as additional sound walls and near the 6 schools that the bypass will go past. It could mean all sorts of things like that. And so we don't really, we don't know. And for the design, for the winning bidder, that, you know, again, there's all sorts of work that they cannot even begin to do. They can't even really begin the final design until the outcome of this process. So, and of course, there is the chance, there are several groups that are asking for a much more rigorous environmental study than the one that is currently being undertaken. It's called a supplemental environmental impact statement, which would basically mean a lot further study. And so far, VDOT is saying that the EA is enough, the environmental assessment. The Federal Highway Administration is saying that, but of course, they'll make the ultimate decision sometime later this year.
And they're likely to be sued by a variety of organizations saying, no, it's not enough, which I believe would slow down the project, correct?
It could. It very well could. And actually, in that documentation, in that 33-page question and answer period, that's actually one of the questions you know, I think that the bidders are sort of aware that this is a very controversial project and that it has been a controversial project. And road projects all around the country of this size are sort of targets for a lot of environmental groups who say we can't build our way out of congestion. So there is that. A lot of the environmental groups at this point are pointing to a North Carolina case that just in which a very similar process to this happened, and it's currently not sure how that project, this is near Charlotte, is going to go forward because, and again, it gets back to this environmental assessment. In that case, it's, well, that's a lot of other details about a different state, which we don't really...
But I think that anyone, including myself, can understand that if this is put off, or not necessarily, but delayed due to environmental issues, that the cost is only going to go up. Whether you're, I mean, even if you're for the project, the simplest of budgets understands that the price of things are increasing, and if we put it off due to environmental issues, that the cost of the end cost will increase.
Yes, and I think that's a risk assessment that VDOT makes, of course. At this point, I think that they are trying to be as careful as they can, that they don't make any mistakes, and that they do this process as transparently as they can without giving away everything. I know that in the past, I'm trying to think of the last one, but the last, just as an example, the specifications for what the bidders are supposed to build on is in a request for proposals, an RFP. At one point, VDOT wasn't going to let anybody see the second one, claiming it was proprietary. But they backed off on that, and they let us take a look at it, which was a good thing to do because it's transparent. And, of course, you know, our job as reporters is to just make sure that they're accountable and to try to check their numbers and to try to ask as many questions as we can. And, of course, there could be a lawsuit. And, of course, you know, again, to go back to that, and I'll just try to wrap this up, we have another project in our area, the McIntyre Road Interchange, which is currently on hold and can't go forward until actually in that case we should have a ruling sometime soon about that one. But that's lots of projects like that.
11:23 on the Wake Up Call with Sean Tubbs, the non-partisan reporter. That's what Charlottesville Tomorrow does, gives you the facts from Charlottesville Tomorrow. Let me tell you that the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, a 50% chance of showers after 2 in the morning. Highs today about 83. Mostly cloudy tonight in the upper 50s. Mostly cloudy with showers tomorrow, highs in the mid-70s. Right now it's a pretty day out there, 65 in the valley, 68 in Lynchburg, 68 in Richmond, 69 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Thanks to Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. They're at Mead Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, brgtshirts.com. Back with Sean Tubbs talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Sean, let's just jump into the numbers, talking about the bids that come in. We had the question from the caller that made a very obvious point. It's whatever your viewpoint of the topic, there are $80 million discrepancy in the high bid and the low bid. And I guess my reading of your reporting is that only one of the seven bids was within budget. Doesn't that mean that that one's automatically going to get it?
Not necessarily. And actually, you know, depending on your interpretation of how these projects can be funded, it appears that about three or four of them are actually within range of the existing cap. Let's actually go ahead and describe that. The total budget for the project is $244.5 million. $47 million has already been spent, about $14 million in engineering, and about $33 million to purchase the two-thirds of the right-of-way that they currently own.
All right, so that's about $197
left. The money that that at this point VDOT has to play with is, and of course, we can say it that way. The money that VDOT has available for this project is $197.4 million. This was money that was allocated to the project last year kind of suddenly and kind of quickly, because one of the arguments always made against this road was that you're never going to be able to save up the money to pay for this thing. And suddenly, $197 million for this project plus about $33 million for a project just to the north of it was allocated to the community last July. Of that amount of money, $20 million was set aside for additional for additional engineering, $118 million for construction, and $71 million for right-of-way. Well, when we first did our reporting of that story, it didn't quite add up to me because I was trying to say, okay, so that the actual available money is $118 plus $20, so that's but they've already spent. Well, you know, again, I need my own dry erase board for this, I think. But it turns out that, and then $71 million for the additional purchase of the rest of the right-of-way. Now, I had seen a previous estimate that had said to purchase the rest of the of the right-of-way, it was going to cost $71 million. This was an estimate made in 2007. But it turns out, according to Jim Utterback, who was the administrator of the Culpeper district of VDOT, he wrote to me and said, actually, the new estimate is $35 million, so we have this additional $35 million that we can apply to anything. We can apply it to construction,
because
design,
cost
build.
Of cost of property and land has gone down much in 5 years?
They say they need a lot less. Well, actually, this is the question about information that you try to get from the government, and it would be helpful to have this information. I'm not sure. They claim that their claim is that the $35 million is all that's necessary because at this point the road is going to be smaller than it was at one point at its northern terminus. It's going to be it has to be entirely on the western side of 29 and not on the eastern side. The previous design had it going pretty far into onto the eastern side. So they claim they don't need that land. But there's still a lot of land that has to be purchased here and there. So I asked to get a copy of their new estimate, and they're withholding it and saying, you can't see that until after we've given the award. So I can't get that document until after June 20th either. So I don't really know. But, I have to take them as read and say that, our reporting, I think, was accurate the day of, because and then we had to print a second story, which we printed on Tuesday, which had this new information. And, of course, we will see what happens.
Again, let's jump back to that question. Why is there such a big difference of $80 million between the low and the high bid? Are these seven, I believe, companies that made the bids, are they bidding on different things or making different calculations to come up with that number? And what I mean by that is everyone has their own labor, and I know that there's the low bid comes to Virginia Beach, and there's somebody from Texas and somebody from New York, so maybe that factors into there about transportation of things. But what is this big difference?
That's a good question, and that's something that I'm trying to find out. I'll also say that two bidders that had qualified had dropped out of the project. There were some, and of course, I haven't been able to talk with any of those folks yet, but I'm looking forward to that, and I'm really looking forward to see this, because I'm not quite sure. I can imagine some of the concepts are probably have a lot to do with the termini at the southern end and the northern end. And one of the questions is going to be, and I'm not sure if the RFP specifically, off the top of my head, without looking
RFP
at it,
again?
Oh, sorry, request for proposals.
Okay.
One of the fears of many people in the community is that you're going to end up with traffic lights at either end of this thing. So you'd have another traffic light. That's the cheapest way to do something. It's just to basically.
But they're not allowed to do that.
Well, that's what I'm not so sure about. And I think that's what a lot of people in the community aren't so sure about, is that there might be a way. We don't know, and we're not going to know until we see those bids. They're probably going to be either tighter or Now, it's important to also go back and say that, and this goes back to the environmental assessment, they probably are going to be very similar because they can't, they're only restricted to the environmental impact, to the footprint of the previous federal approval. So the design builder can't buy any more land and can't say, because the second they go outside of this existing footprint, it definitely opens them up to additional federal scrutiny. And that's something that VDOT is, would probably not like to have happen because at this point, Secretary of Transportation Sean Connaughton had even said last year it was his hope to get construction underway by the end of this year. Now, that's not likely to happen because there's a lot of steps in the approval process. Even though at this point the decision has been made by the elected officials to move forward, there's a lot of regulatory steps that have to be taken. And then, of course, there likely will be a legal case that goes with this, too.
We are talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Senior reporter Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville tomorrow. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN Rocks. You're welcome to call up, ask your question. I do ask that you try and keep your comments to the topic at hand in a polite manner and sort of on topic to what we are discussing at the time. Let's see, we got a call from Randy in Charlottesville. Hi, Randy.
Hello, how you doing, sir?
I'm well. You got a question for Sean or a comment on the topic?
Yes, it's both a question and a comment. Jim Bacon, the former editor of Virginia Business, who's as pro-business as you can possibly be, the return on investment on this highway, I think he published it in February, but it was early this year. And he found that there would be $8 million of benefits for a highway that's costing, as Sean has pointed out, something in the range of $240 million. He found so few benefits, and most of those benefits went downstate to Lynchburg. He found so few benefits that he called it the road to wealth destruction. So my question is, my comment is, I would like Sean Tubbs and you, Mr. Moore, to address the road to wealth destruction by Jim Bacon, but then to explain to us exactly what benefits there are to Albemarle County, because we all know that traffic, new highways induces more driving, and in this particular case will induce 18-wheel trucks to come through our community.
All right, Randy, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Again, my goal today is to ask questions for Sean Tubbs and to be to have little to do with taking sides. So, but my first comment will be on Randy is that he says the $8 million goes towards Lynchburg. Well, isn't the money coming from the state, so it should support whomever?
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely the argument, is that I think the argument from VDOT and statewide is that this is a state highway, and that to people in Charlottesville and, I'm sorry, to people in Lynchburg and Danville, Charlottesville is a bottleneck. And I think that's an argument that they've been making for years, and that the previously suggested alternative, and this was something that was going to go forward, were grade-separated interchanges at Hydraulic, Airport Road, Rio Road, but the business community in Charlottesville has been dead set against that for years, saying it's going to destroy the character of Seminole Trail, which is, and of course, so they have been supporters of this bypass and pushing for it for many years, asking for it for several years, fighting the Places 29 initiative, which was to, as I said, was to put these grade separated interchanges on there and to build other roads such as Hillsdale Drive Extended, Berkmar Drive Extended, which was supposed to take traffic, which was supposed to give alternatives for local traffic. But I think that statewide, or at least downstate, the idea was that that's not going to work. And of course, there was local opposition here. In terms of the benefit, I can't really speak to that except just to say that it certainly is going to provide another way for people to go. We don't know exactly how many people are going to choose that route because, of course, there hasn't been a traffic model developed of this for several years. This week, we should get some speculative data from the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is one of those obscure bodies I talked about at the beginning, which we'll take a look and we'll kind of model that. And so we'll have some sense, according to a computer model, how that might be. But those, I guess the opponents of this road would argue that these decisions have been made without any data. And I think that's what I believe that's what Randy was talking about there.
And again, for those who have interest, Randy was talking about Jim Bacon's analysis called The Road to Wealth Destruction. Pick that up if you'd like. For some reason, I have a feeling that that's provides data that one side will agree with and one side will disagree with. But as Sean says, it's always best to read all the information before you make a diehard decision. Let me thank L. Oppelman's from Lynchburg for their support today. Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department, featuring acoustic guitars, violins, mandolins, electric guitar packages, and complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg, and at loppelman.com. Sean, one of the things I found interesting was that for making the bid, every company gets paid $100,000 just for submitting that.
Yes, and Rick Moore and Associates could not have submitted that bid to get that payday just because there were two steps. In order to submit a bid, you had to prove that you had experience. It's like a job application, that first part. You have to prove that you have done similar work to this before. And, I don't know if this is common or not, but, again, they spent 6 months working on this project, 6 or 7 months. And, of course, VDOT will be able to take something out of that. One thing that might occur, in my reading of the RFP, is that VDOT is going to own all of these bids. And if they like something from one of the bids that doesn't necessarily appear in another one, in terms of the design, then they can potentially take that. And so I believe that's, I think, how they can justify the purchase, because it will become their property. Well, it becomes the property of the state. It's actually the property of all of us, really. It's our taxpayer dollars that go to this. So that's one thing that they get that money for.
One of the other things that I saw in reading your articles, other articles, and plenty of comments on any article that you want to read, whether it's from our underwriter, The Hook, or Charlottesville Tomorrow, or The Daily Progress, et cetera. One of them said that this is really all the University of Virginia, and they get what they want because it ends near, at the northern end is near their North Research Park, and the southern end is right by John Paul Jones Arena, and all they're really doing is making it nice and easy for everyone to get to the basketball games or the football game parking, et cetera.
Officially, they have taken no comment. I have tried to get...
I love that. Instead of no, it's no comment.
I have tried to get their... I have tried to get the position of the university, and they have not given that information out. They have, however, been part of the discussion about the design for the Southern Terminus. It's going to come very close to Darden, and it's going to... and if you think about where Darden is, you've got those woods there right by the parking garage. It's going to change that view a little bit, and I think that one of the things that the university, or at least the University of Virginia Foundation, tried to do, they're the foundation that owns the real estate, that owns a lot of real estate on behalf of the university. They had tried to get the Southern Terminus moved up as far north away from that as possible. But then you've got St. Anne's Belfield, who want the exact opposite. They want it pushed down. Now, they've come to some agreement, but once again, we're not going to see what it's going to look like until we see the bids and until it's been approved, at least approved by the CTB, the Commonwealth Transportation Board. In terms of the university, I will just make this comment. Traffic in and out of Charlottesville will be very different for football games. And that actually, going back to that document between the 33, all those questions and answers, that was one of the questions was, are we going to have to accommodate game day traffic? Because we do have a major draw here in terms of big concerts, big things like finals, exercises, and of course, a lot of traffic comes through there. But what will happen is that the bypass will keep on going, and but it's going to go from a four-lane highway into a two-lane road right there at Leonard Sandridge Boulevard. It's that exact same thing. And one of the questions I have, and I think somewhere in the documentation there is information about this, they're going to have to do something, I think, to prepare for that traffic, because I'm not sure if traffic flows are really going to be able to handle that in the North Grounds area. So that's one of the things that I'll be watching over the next couple of years.
11:40 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins and Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, the business of a tow truck. When does it go from necessary to ripoff? Should it be a $145 punishment if you're 30 minutes overdue? And is one downtown parking lot partnering with one towing service to cause the most expensive trouble? And just before Virginia National Bank's annual shareholders meeting, a former chairman seeks a change in the bank's leadership. And months after a Culpeper police officer gunned down an unarmed woman, the official explanation has been contradicted. Now 500 citizens have signed a petition about the allegedly slow follow-up. The Hook. Read all about it every week. And thanks to The Backyard for their support. UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu open for lunch and dinner, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard is open Monday through Saturday, and you are invited to their outdoor patio this summer. You can call ahead for takeout, 202-8215. You can also find The Backyard on Facebook. Okay, back to our conversation about the Route 29 bypass with Charlottesville Tomorrow's senior reporter, Sean Tubbs. You can call in with your question or comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. Sean, you mentioned how the property would look, you know, diminishing the view at the southern end near Darden School, et cetera. One of the comments that was made by Board of Supervisors Dennis Rooker says that the VTOT told bidders not to include landscaping in the bids, and he says that'll cost $10 million.
Yes, that was in the original. In the original RFP, Request for Proposals, that was issued in late September, landscaping was in there. The bidder was going to be responsible for that. It was subsequently taken out in November, which was one of the things that maybe VDOT didn't want people to know, but that was one of the things that was removed. There was a discussion this last week between Jim Utterback and Mr. Rooker. It was at a meeting that we covered, in which Mr. Utterback said that the cost of landscaping would be a little bit less, like $1 million or so. And so
that's not a little bit.
Well, it's
10% of what Dennis Rooker said.
Although
many people have accused him of overstating all dollars spent because he's against it.
Yes. And I think that's just it, is that we don't quite know what that will look like. But no matter if the figure is $1 million or $10 million, it's an example of one of the things that is going to be an extra cost, which is outside of the existing budget for the project. And this is something that, you know, that's one of the things to follow, and we shall see. But about the landscaping is that, you know, until we know, so for instance, one of the things we won't know is what the cuts of the sides of, you know, along the roads, how much landscaping is going to be necessary to either mitigate that or to keep the soil from falling. You know, there's just lots of questions that we still have, and as this the story continues to unfold.
A little bit about the non-financial pros and cons of the bypass. There have been conversations of all sorts. Going behind the proposed Western bypass, going past, is it six schools?
I think so, six or seven. Yes. You've got Albemarle High School. You've got the elementary school there. You've got the middle school there. You've got Agner Hurt, which was actually built after the original federal approval was made back in 1993. Of course, you've got St. Anne's Belfield. I think I'm leaving a couple out. One of the arguments has been is that since that federal approval, there's been new rules about school siting from the Environmental Protection Agency that says you shouldn't build schools this close to a highway. Well, those schools are already there, and lots of people have argued that that students are going to be put in harm's way. At the same time, my daughter goes to Burnley Moran, which is right there on the US 250 bypass, and so I don't see people campaigning to shut that school down. In other words, that's just one of those questions, is that what is going to happen with this in terms of that? I don't know, but I think that people who are opposed to the road point to questions like that for reasons why they're opposed to the road. People who support the road, again, have other things to point out. Like, as I said, just that, so for instance, Agner Hurt Elementary School was built knowing full well that it's right next to the right-of-way for a potential four-lane highway. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And that's one of the things that will come into play during this environmental assessment. And I think that those who would like to see the more rigorous supplementary environmental impact statement very much want that to be part of the conversation.
There's an argument about the bypass. I believe it is it twice that it crosses the reservoir?
It doesn't cross the reservoir. It just goes within very close proximity of it. If you're familiar with that area, and if you're familiar with Earliesville Road, which crosses directly over top of the bypass, over top of the reservoir.
Twice,
yes. The bypass is, I don't believe it crosses it. There's no bridge. It does, of course, cross the Rivanna River just to the east of the South Fork Reservoir Dam there. That's, of course, is one of the arguments against the road is to do this, and that and the environmental assessment that was written back in the 90s addresses that. I think it's like 2.3 acres of wetlands that it crosses. I might not have that number exactly correct. But that is one of the concerns that people have. Of course, we just saw one of the other controversial projects in this area, the expansion of the Ragged Mountain Dam, reservoir rather, will move that reservoir closer to I-64. Well, part of that project is to strengthen the embankment to make it less likely that if a spill were to happen that it would get into the water supply. And I think that that's just one of the questions that we have any time a road is built like this. And it's what mitigation will be there in case something really bad happens. Is there an action plan that can go into place if, say, a tanker truck tips there and the toxins make their way into the water supply? Those are some of the questions that we will study and take a look at as we see this environmental assessment done.
There have been certainly differing numbers put forth about how much traffic the road will actually take off Route 29.
Yes. I think if you go back to this, and the opponents of the road have said this for years, that you're only going to take off... Okay, if the problem locally is a very congested Emmett Street and Seminole Trail because of the proliferation of all the traffic lights over the last years, and that's the only, pretty much the only way to go north-south. You have other ways, but...
Unless you know the back roads.
Unless you know the back roads, and until the Meadow Creek Parkway is completely finished, or John Warner Parkway... That's a whole other radio show. The question is, how much is going to be taken off of US 29, of the existing US 29? And the figures, according, if you go back to the old data, which is from the early 90s, it appears that about 10% or 12% of traffic would actually switch to using that other road. But again, we've had a lot of things have changed since then. We've had a lot of development up in Greene County. We've had a lot of development in the northern end. We have other things such as North Point, which is about 900 homes, I believe, that directly across the street from the airport. Across from the airport. We have all this additional traffic and all these existing conditions, and that's one of the things, is that we really don't have a good sense of what that number will do, and if that's correct. And of course, I think one of the... When Randy spoke a few minutes ago, he mentioned something called induced traffic. What that means is basically if by building the additional capacity, you enable people to live further and further away, and you actually make the problem worse. And of course, that's an argument that's out there. The other side of that argument would be, well, the condition's already pretty worse. This is just another way to add capacity to the network to allow more options for people to go. Of course, it's a very expensive, at $244 million, it's a very expensive option, but it is the one that, our elected officials have decided to proceed with.
11:50 on the wake-up call, talking with Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville tomorrow about the Route 29 Western Bypass. Hang around, because at noon, Drew Thompson is already here in the room for Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Drew plays the roots of alternative because he says you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Enjoy the times gone by with Les Temps Perdue at noon on WNRN. Sean, I found this, and I'm pretty sure I copied this out of one of your articles on Charlottesville Tomorrow. Repeated 15 times in the 33-page document to potential bids. Quote, the department, VDOT, does not represent or warrant that the information contained in the supplemental information package is reliable or accurate or suitable for designing this project. So 15 times they say, we don't know if the information is correct or that you really should use it for making your bid. Am I interpreting that properly?
I think that is probably a legal term of art in a certain way. You know, reading that document, it was pretty eye-opening for that, because there's a lot of information. You know, again, what they're doing is they're saying they're pointing to previous studies, but then on the other hand, they're saying, but don't necessarily trust those previous studies, because, and I think the thing that's left out of that sentence is because you're going to have to do a lot of them again. And that, because again, you know, we have this environmental assessment, which might mean that more is going to be necessary to make this project work. There's going to be new traffic studies will be required. And but reading that, it really was like reading something out of Catch-22, which I've really got to go back and reread. Because I think because
it would be the basis of your novel about all
this. Yes, I think so, because I think that when you read this, I mean, and this is what makes being a journalist so interesting, is that, you know, I don't study a lot of RFPs. I don't study a lot of these. I think this is a pretty unique event, and it's in a language that you and I don't necessarily speak. And I think that's a lot of reasons why people don't trust government, or there's a lot of jargon, and there's a lot of legalese, and there's a lot of there's a lot of wiggle room in a lot of these things. And I think that sentence was basically VDOT's way of saying, look over here, but we're not telling you to look over there, type thing. And it was pretty eye-opening to read that.
All right. You keep talking about RFPs. Again, what does that stand for?
Request for Proposals. And we
all
see
right, so
this.
That's sort mm-hmm. of that's one way to change the bid a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we bid on this, but now we found this bit of information, so we may need to change it, and that may cost a little more money?
Well, yes. Well, the RFP process, that process is about to conclude as soon sometime this week when the VDOT issues the notice of intent to award a bid. But whoever that bidder is, it can still be changed. So, for instance, let's go back to landscaping. At some point, it's either going to be handled as a separate contract, meaning someone else will be hired, or they'll do a change order, which will mean however much money they can throw it in there. But at that point, and I'm not quite sure, and this might be something interesting that comes out, is that how far can they go with these change orders, and how much can they change the initial RFPs?
Well, that's one of the questions that we got much earlier in the hour, is what happens with cost overruns? Can you submit a change order and say, sorry, we only said it would be $122 million, but if you approve that change order because we didn't really factor that in, now we need $132 million. Mm-hmm. So who pays for the cost overrun?
Well, that's one of the questions that is still sort of, I mean, again, this is sort of an unprecedented thing for this area, at least, and probably for statewide. VDOT wants to handle as many of their projects using this design-build process as they can in the future. But this will be a test case in terms of that, because we just don't know. So, for instance, let's say the cost overrun is $5 million. When I spoke with Jim Utterback on Monday, last Monday, I asked him that, and he said that in in terms of the Culpeper District, he has the authority to transfer money from other projects to this project. But I'm not exactly sure. Yes, I think it's 10. Yeah, he can't take out 10% or something from another project for this project. And he only needs the approval of a member of the Commonwealth Transportation Board to do so. But I'm not so sure if that's going to stand up if the project, say, is a $50 million cost overrun. Now, I'm not suggesting it's going to be a $50 million cost overrun, because I just don't know. I mean, I think, you know, again, going back to being a reporter, I mean, I'm still learning this about this project as we go forward, because, I have 5 years of experience looking at the details of transportation planning, and it's fascinating stuff, but I'm still learning as well. And so that's one of those questions that will inform my reporting as we go forward, is how far can they go with these change orders?
11:56 here on Wake Up Call, talking about the Route 29 Western Bypass with Sean Tubbs, senior reporter at Charlottesville Tomorrow. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst, Lynchburg. Sean, I didn't bring this up earlier because I knew it was going to take us down a road that we didn't want to go within the hour, at least into great detail. But there's certainly a side that is for and a side that is against this project. And people always say, well, you know, make your voice heard, place your vote. Well, Mr. Boyd was reelected, even though he was one of the two people who received the most blame from this late night vote. And that's what I don't want to get into, is the right or wrongs of that. We've done it before. But when it was brought up, it was certainly put the shouts out to their highest sound, yet he was reelected. So that tells me that there's certainly a large group of people who want this project to take place.
Yes, I mean, again, that's probably a whole other hour to talk about that election. I think Mr. Boyd has been upfront from the beginning about his position. He's never tried to, he has never said that he's against the bypass. He's never used that as a way to get support. He's always been pretty clear about his position. And I think he didn't shy away from that. His opponent in that election, Cynthia Neff, tried to tie him to that decision. And I think that it didn't work so much. I don't have the numbers in front of me for how close that election. It was not that close an election. And I think that he did hold town meetings. He did get a committee together to inform the design for the northern side of the terminus. That was before the election of last year. And I think his constituents rewarded him for that, and I think rewarded him for his honesty and not trying to say something that he wasn't. But I think, it's certainly this election, just speaking in terms of local politics, I think that this bypass is going to be with us for a while in terms of how it goes. I mean, the story's not over yet. There's still a lot of questions about whether or not at the end of the day, is the money going to be there? One of the other things, and I know we're at the close of the hour, but the funding for this bypass is sort of, I'm very curious. The next document that I'm looking forward to, and I'm giving away all of my reporting secrets here, is something called the financial plan. Any project over $100 million needs to have a financial plan. I'm very curious to see what that project is going to look at, because a lot of this project is based on bond revenues. And those bond revenues are anticipated to be paid down through debt service using future federal money. Well, we all know that this country is in somewhat of a financial kerfuffle. No, that's not quite the right word. A financial mess, in a way, in terms of this, at the congressional level, they struggle to get transportation bills completed.
Well, let me ask you a real quick question here at the very end. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that at the late night vote that was put forth was that it was said we could still do other projects. Mm-hmm.
Belmont Bridge.
Berkmar Drive extended, yeah. And the Belmont Bridge. This wasn't going to stop those projects to do this project. And then
Sean Connaughton
said, I never promised that.
Yes, but he appears to have fulfilled that promise, at least on two of those. Now, Berkmar is too complicated to explain with a minute left. But the Belmont Bridge and the Hillsdale Drive projects appear to be close to fully funding at the same, on June 20th, at the same meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. They will also, at which they'll vote for the bypass, they'll also allocate money for the next 6 years. And two of those projects are the Belmont Bridge and Hillsdale. So that promise appears to have been fulfilled.
All right. We could obviously go on for quite some time. You know what, Sean? You're going to be on again sometime in the future to talk about this as it goes on, especially after the June 20th bid release. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Again, next Sunday, we will be talking about what to read for the summer. I'll have staff from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library join Sandy McAdams from Daedalus Bookshop, and myself will talk about books. And funding, there's always funding, isn't there?
There's a great RFP that you can all read.
Go on, the show will be podcast. You can make your comments there. You can go to Charlottesville tomorrow and make your comments and ask your questions there. Thanks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.